can turn it around if we just come together. Welcome back to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and one of the reasons I love doing this program, Green Programming, which has been my passion for the last dozen years or so, is the people I get to meet in the course of covering the most important developments taking place, and I think that's anything on the environmental front, because after all, if we don't have a safe home in which we can thrive, and if we're not nurturing our planet, then she won't nurture us back, and nothing is more important. Well, let's say, I guess air is most important, and then water and food. Well, they're all kind of right up there in terms of what we humans need to survive. So let's take a few minutes and talk about the food that we are blessed to have, such abundance in our country especially, and about the fact that we almost have too much of a good thing. We take it for granted. Americans waste more than 40% of the food that is produced for consumption. We're going to find out how that happens sort of upstream and downstream and the cost. And it's so unnecessary, but we need to come up with better systems, better ways to get food to people who need it, to not overcook, overbuy, and end up trashing so much of it. And I'm just so pleased that Jonathan Bloom has made this a focus of a book called American Wasteland, because it's a topic that needs the scrutiny it's getting. It certainly deserves. So welcome to The Green Front, Jonathan.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I really was pleased to see you on CNN a few weekends back. I was in my hotel room and was walking out the door with my family, and I said, stop, I need to see this. This is a really important topic. And having started covering the Green Beat 13 years ago with a one-minute feature called Trash Talk, which was all about reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot, just trying to bring attention, mainstream attention, because it was on CBS Radio in San Francisco, to all the waste we Americans create, and mostly not really consciously. So what brought you to the subject that is kind of ever-present? It's right there in front of us. I think a lot of people notice, but really has not been studied much, talked about much, documented much.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a household that was pretty careful with the food that we had. I'm not sure that I really was aware of that as a kid, but I certainly was comfortable with eating leftovers. And if you were to take a peek inside the refrigerator of our family's fridge back in the day, you'd see all kinds of leftover containers, and nothing really got thrown away. So nothing was too small to save.
Sounds like my house now.
Yeah, I'm sure that sounds familiar to many people out there.
My dog gets lots of goodies that my family won't eat after a day.
Yep, there you go. Well,
and he's a lab, so he loves it.
Yeah, I have a dog as well. They tend to be good ultimate uses if you can't get any people to eat the leftovers. But
that can be problematic, though. Sometimes if you give them things that don't agree with their stomach, you have to watch that, too. But let's get back to what humans are doing with food and how you got involved. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just had to throw that comment in because that's the kind of house we have here, and I have to clean out the refrigerator fairly often because there's a lot of green growing in my fridge, and I do like almost all things green, but not moldy food. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, just to go with that for a sec, I mean, I think a lot of people aren't really used to eating leftovers, and so they don't really know how to go about it. But my message is that it really doesn't have to be a chore, and it's the kind of thing that's not very difficult. It's certainly convenient to cook dinner and then have a lunch ready-made for the next day. But also it's kind of a chance to be creative in using up what you have. I tend to look at it as a bit of a challenge. You know, let's say, actually right now in my refrigerator I have a whole bunch of blue cheese, and I don't love blue cheese, but so now I have to figure out sort of how to use it and what to do with it.
Blue cheese, did you say that's the one cheese I don't care for because it's kind of strong, but just about give me any other kind of cheese. So
yeah.
Let's talk about your book, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What You Can Do About It. How do we come to be so wasteful? I mean, we are in so many ways, not just food, but it's certainly an important area when you look at how much hunger there is, not only around the rest of the world, but in our own country, in our own community. So we have this, on the one hand, this obesity epidemic and people eating too much and too much of the wrong foods, while we're wasting a lot of the healthier food just by definition. You know, produce, vegetables and fruit, the organic materials, you know, do tend to, if they're not eaten fresh, tend to go bad. And just what an important area it is to focus on, because we can't afford to continue this way, can we?
No, and it's certainly not sustainable, the rate at which we're wasting food. So people talk a lot about sustainability in foods, and certainly eating more organic and local foods will certainly help. But hopefully my book is going to get people's attention to waste as something that is anything but sustainable. But you had asked sort of how we got to this point, and I think the overarching reason is that we take food for granted. And that singular fact makes us waste a whole bunch of food. Specifically, why do we take things for granted, our food? Well, it's abundant. It's kind of everywhere you turn. There's certainly more food than there ever has been as a result of some policies in the 70s about kind of growing from fence row to fence row. And I'm sure you've heard the statistics about how we produce about twice the amount of calories that we need per day.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of faced with this abundance when we go to the store, and really we see food in all kinds of places now. It's in pharmacies, it's in anywhere from, you know, the big box hardware stores to you name it. Most retail outlets are selling food. Another factor here is that food is tremendously cheap, and I know some people might be sitting at home thinking, well, you know, I've seen food prices rise a fair amount in the last couple of years, and that's certainly true. But when you look at the price of food as a relation to our income, it's about 10% of our household spending, and that's the lowest amount of any country in the world. So as a proportion of what we spend, you know, we really just don't spend much on food, and we don't tend to value things that are cheap.
And what about the fact that at this point organic produce does still cost more, and it, in some cases it prices people out of being able to buy it, although certainly nice to see places like Walmart where people shop who are on a budget are offering organic alternatives. Is it just because we haven't scaled up the production of the alternative, which is a more natural way of growing fruits and vegetables, and that can change, or is it always going to be at a premium price?
I'm not entirely sure about the pricing on organics. I mean, certainly I'd like to see it come down. I know in my life I tend to lean toward local over organic because I enjoy kind of being able to talk to the people who've been growing it and can really ask them those questions.
And that is a really positive development, farmers markets. We certainly have many in our community here in the Bay Area. And do you see that also as one of the encouraging signs out there?
Yeah, they're really booming. I mean, it seems like every time I turn around, there's another market near me. I'm in North Carolina, but yeah. I mean, I think the positive development there from a waste perspective is that when you go to the farmer's market, you see food that looks, you know, it doesn't look perfect. It's just food, and the important thing is how it tastes, not how it looks. And I think we've gotten away from that a bit at some of the higher end grocery stores. There's a real emphasis on aesthetics. And I think that has some harmful impact where, you know, we are looking for our raw foods to be just beautiful, whereas I think the important thing would be to focus on the taste.
Now, there's something called Food Rescue, and we certainly have great programs here in the San Francisco area called Food Runners, for one, where, you know, it has been, you know, systematized. It is, systems have been set up to take the excess food from hotels and restaurants where there's large banquets and perfectly good prepared food would otherwise go into the landfill. And it is not easy to set up those rescue systems, but it is so important. That's one of the things you talk about in your book. Do you sort of help make it more doable for people who might be wanting to start this kind of system where they live or work but are overwhelmed, don't quite know how to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much easier I make it, but I try and raise awareness on it, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, a couple hours a week of volunteer time will really make an impact. And you know, the group you mentioned, Food Runners in San Francisco, is a great example where they just have a whole bunch of people, and you sign up and you basically make a pickup run, and most of the time it doesn't even involve a car. Sometimes it does, but you don't necessarily need one. If you're just going to go to a bakery or something and pick up the bread at the end of the day. So it's the kind of thing where not only is it helpful in that it's rescuing food that would otherwise be thrown out, but it's also going to raise people's awareness and open eyes to how much food would be thrown out if there weren't these food recovery groups.
You talk about food rescue. I do things called napkin interventions where I see, you know, people mindlessly grab, you know, five or more napkins sometimes, and then they don't even use them, and they leave them on the table,
yeah,
walk away, and the bus person is about to come put them in the trash and untouched by human hands pretty much. And I'll stick them either, put them back if they're really clean and still neatly stacked. I don't want anyone to think I'm putting away dirty napkins, but I'll just stick them in my purse, and inevitably something will spill in the car or someone will sneeze, and there I've got that napkin. You know, it's the kind of consciousness,
yeah,
that most people don't have, really, and it's sort of the same thing we're talking about. It's how do we value food, and we don't give it much thought. It's pretty mindless, and then, of course, one of the fundamental problems underlying all this is that conservation clashes with convenience, and, you know, we've become, you know, an on-the-go society, and fast food and supersize me, all that. We are well aware of the problems, not only in terms of obesity, but just the solid waste it creates. How do we change our mindset here in this country where we've almost had too much of a good thing on a lot of fronts, but in particular in relation to food?
Well, you talked about convenience, and that's a factor I talk about a little bit in the book. But let's say you are a busy person, you work till about 6 or 7 in the evening. If you kind of recognize that and think, well, you know what, I might not have time to cook every night, then maybe you should make that or incorporate that into your shopping trips. So a big pitfall that a lot of people fall into is that they physically shop as if they have all the time in the world, and they buy all these fresh foods, and they have good intentions to cook them and eat really healthily, but, you know, the time comes where you get out of work and it's 6:30, then chances are you're not going to be making that meal that takes an hour and a half to prepare. So,
oh, yeah.
So the result, all that food in the fridge, you know, just mm-hmm. sits there day after day.
Especially, you know, there's more people, I think, living in single households, and that is harder sometimes to get motivated to cook for other people, and, you know, you can't always buy just a small head of lettuce, so it seems like there would be a lot more waste there potentially, as opposed to the scenario where there is a family and perhaps the mother is lucky enough to work in the home where she can prepare meals, which is, let's face it, what we had, you know, for many decades, that was the norm, and it's changing. So how do we, you know, address the way we truly live and kind of, you know, pause, rewind, slow down the process of preparing food, thinking about where our food comes from, valuing food?
Yeah, well, continuing on with what we can do, I mean, basically being an organized shopper will help. So making a meal plan for the week and maybe incorporating two or three nights where you know you're not going to cook from scratch, or maybe you'll be using up leftovers, or maybe you'll be ordering in, you know, making a detailed shopping list from that plan, and then when you're in the store, trying to stick to that as closely as you can. And, you know, I don't want to be like the person who tells you can't splurge or anything, but we really get ourselves into a tough spot a lot of times where we just buy so much food that we couldn't possibly eat it. So being aware about that will only help.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No. I want to get to the solutions for sure.
Yeah, sure.
And I just love that, just as an aside, you've got on your website the pounds of U.S. food being wasted since this page loaded. And there's something like 73,000. Well, it keeps going up. I mean, how do you actually tell it? That is a fascinating, disturbing, distressing, important set of numbers you've got, and they keep changing. How do you tally that?
Credit for that. It's a little widget that I borrowed from the Society of St. Andrew, which is a gleaning organization, and they get people out into the farm fields to recover food that would otherwise just be plowed under. And but it's pretty staggering when you think about all the food that isn't used, and you talk about all the people in America who go without or don't have enough food, and that number just keeps rising. So it's in addition to the wasted food number on the site there.
Yeah, where are we? Have we maxed out in terms of wasting? Are we starting to turn the tide and be more conservation-minded when it comes to food? Are we still way off the charts and spiraling, you know, ahead blindly into oblivion, or the day we wake up and I don't think our food will just suddenly not be there? But certainly with crises like what's happening with honeybees, that could impact, you know, our agriculture. I think bees are responsible for pollinating about a quarter of our produce. If anyone wonders why we need be concerned about what's going on with the disappearing bees, you give them that statistic, and that is sobering. And so is the one that we're 5% of the world's population here in America, and we use 25% of the world's resources, and I suppose that's food as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to think that we're kind of at the peak of wasting and that we can't go any higher. I'm not entirely sure that that's the case, but hopefully so. I mean, as food prices rise, I think people will tend to be a little more careful with their food. So if there is a silver lining to a recession, it might be that we're a little more aware of food waste, at least from my perspective.
Well, that's like when the gas prices go up. Not that I'm happy anyone's suffering, including
me.
Right. I can afford it. You know, where I live, it's one of the highest, you know, prices of gas in the country. Whenever they give the national averages, where San Francisco is right up there at the top. But it does finally, you know, make people think about the fuel efficiency of the vehicle they're driving. Just as a shortage of food or high prices will make people be more conscious. I guess that consciousness is what we're talking about, and you know, it's the irony of the American success story that we have, you know, been so blessed with abundance and variety that we are maxing out. There's no question, and we are maxing out at the cost of our children and grandchildren and beyond, the future of those to come. And so that's why I think your book is just so important among many that are really focusing on why our waste matters.
Yeah, well, there's a chapter called in the book called "The Disgrace of Plenty," and you know, it's we have this abundance, and now it's sort of a question of what we're going to do with it. And hopefully, we can be a little wiser with our resources and the distribution of them to those who need, and also just a little bit shrewder in how we as individuals use our food.
And we have the abundance, and that's not. And we shouldn't assume that we're going to continue to have such abundance. That's the point. There is that assumption, isn't there?
Yes. There's no guarantees in this world, and the evidence is certainly pointing us to conclude that we'll have to be more careful to feed all of the people who will be on this planet in the next 50 years. You know, people throw around these massive numbers, and they say, you know, how will we feed all these people? And the, you know, GMO and that kind of stuff is thrown around as the only answer. Now that's a whole other conversation. But my point is, hey, let's actually use the food that we grow. And what a simple idea. And it's not that there will ever be an end to food waste. We'll never get it down to zero, but we can sure do a heck of a lot better.
Heck of a lot better. I hate to think what gets wasted and thrown out, you know, in the back of the grocery stores across America. You know, people don't buy things that are bruised or discolored or starting to over-ripen. And they really do a good job of keeping that out of sight, don't they, how they trash all that. I think it would make sensitive souls like myself and yourself sick to see it. And maybe we shouldn't keep it out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would be interesting if we had the dumpster out front, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that people would. Well, that's what your book is trying to do without having to force us to see and smell the food being
no
dumped.
Way,
but,
yeah.
But that's the point, right, that it's an easy thing for us not to think about, and yet
yeah,
it's important
sure.
that we focus on it. I guess that's probably true of most of the coverage of environmental issues, you know, and that's why it's been, frankly, so challenging to get Americans to pay attention. It's not easy. It's not quick. It's not, you know, there's no simple solutions. And yet, ignoring how wasteful we are and the consequences and climate change and ocean dying, you know, all those trends that are disturbing, it's like they're only going to get worse if we keep our heads in the sand, right?
Yeah. No, we certainly need to be aware of it before the problem will improve. And I'm trying to pull back the curtain a little bit and show what happens at supermarkets, at restaurants, and even in our homes, where certainly people are aware of what happens. It might be the kind of thing that's just out of sight, out of mind, and you don't really think about the food that you're throwing away. It's just kind of seen as a normal part of running your household. But hopefully, in the next year or two, we'll start to get better at that. And getting back to the supermarkets. You'd mentioned about how picky people are, and you know, you'd be shocked to see all the stuff that's thrown out. Well, that's definitely the case. I spent a few months working in a produce department at a supermarket, and this wasn't necessarily a high-end place. It's a pretty middle-of-the-road supermarket, and the motto was if you wouldn't buy it as a shopper, then just throw it out. And I would always bring these pieces of fruit or vegetables to my manager and say, what about this one? You know, would you keep this? And invariably, and I'll just toss it.
You know, I think we were separated at birth, Jonathan. I started Trash Talk 13 years ago, and I, as a kid, I was really freaky. I used to get upset when I'd see third, fourth grade, you know, kids throwing out their lunches that their moms would make, and, you know, the cafeteria, they'd take, you know, a tray full of food and toss most of it. It pained me physically in my stomach, so call me strange, but if we could only take that gene that a few of us got and clone it into everybody, we'd have a much more conservative America, wouldn't we, in the best possible sense. You talk about the local versus, you know, blueberries from Chile issue. I mean, that's certainly one I want to go into a little bit deeper in the remaining minutes that we have, because, you know, that is the option now is, you can get organic and or local or not, and you can get things, you know, that are not in season flown in, but the embedded energy by bringing in mangoes from, you know, Mongolia or something, I'm just making that up, you know, is huge, and people are excited to see, you know, fruits that we usually only see in summer. In the dead of winter, it's tempting to buy them, but I find myself, you know, reaching for it and then saying no, because think of what it took, all the fuel and the CO2 and pollution caused by bringing that to my market. And then I feel that, well, it's just going to, if everyone doesn't buy it, I guess they won't purchase it, and that's the key. But I hate to think that it's going to get wasted as well. Like just yesterday, I was in my local store. It was $6, $7, $8 for strawberries and blueberries and raspberries. And, you know, I guess it's going out of season, and I didn't buy it. Who can afford that? But you know what? They'll probably get thrown out, because who is going to spend $8 on a small container of blueberries? So it really is not easy being green, is it? Knowing too much. And yet we must. And yet we must.
It's a bit of a curse, yeah. no, it's tricky. And I think that underlines a real problem is with our food system is that it's confusing. And, I mean, I'm confused when I go to the store. There are a lot of decisions to be made. You know, this is organic, but it's from Chile. And you know, or this is conventional, but I know it's from, you know, a few states away or something. So we're constantly put in this position where we don't really know what to do. And I think that's part of why we've gotten away from being resourceful with our food, in that we've kind of lost our food ways, and people don't necessarily know when something's good or when it's not, and they don't really trust their senses. But you know, when people always ask me, you know, what about the expiration dates, and can I really trust that? And you know, I think basically my advice to people is just to use your common sense.
Trust your nose.
Use your sense of smell. Yeah, trust your nose. See how it looks. If necessary, maybe take a little taste. But you'll kind of know when something's not good.
So you're going to do a movie to follow the book, Jonathan, since that seems to be the trend, Fast Food Nation, Super Size Me, all these important topics?
I don't know if I can make the topic of food waste sexy enough, but
we'll I'd love it. I'll promote it.
Well, we are separated at birth, so you know.
Well, I just want to ask you in our last 2 minutes, Jonathan, are you working on this issue full time? Are you still a student? You sound and look young enough to be. I hope you're working on it full time because we need you, and we need your message, and we need your research is really critically important.
Yeah, I am working on it full time. I'm trying to get the message out there, so I'm definitely looking to publicize the book now, but also spread the word through talking at schools and appearances and all that kind of thing. So
great. Well, go far, go loud, go wide. I will tell people about it as I go forward because it's a really important area. I mean, who can go one day, let alone a couple of hours in America, without eating? So it's a kind of thing that we could be a lot more conscious about given the information. So let's get more Americans to not be living under the ignorance is bliss excuse, right?
Sounds about right, yeah.
Okay.
And we waste about a half pound of food per person per day. So.
Okay, so keep that in mind if you go have lunch now. Save the leftovers. Do whatever you can. I love the gleaning trend and the farmer market trend and the locavore trend. All those are encouraging signs. But as you know, there's a big country out there that has no clue about this. So, again, good luck with your message, with your book. And if anyone would like to check out Jonathan's work, go to wastedfood.com. Thanks again, Jonathan, for being on The Green Front today. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and I didn't even get a chance to talk about the movie screening I went to last night, a new green film called So Right, So Smart. Hopefully we'll get to that next time. It's about what business is doing to be more sustainable. And, of course, the centerpiece of that is the original green industrialist. That's Ray Anderson of Interface Carpets, and a lot of other people I know and have been reporting on for a long time, Gary Hirschberg of Stonyfield Farms, and Seventh Generation, Jeffrey Hollander. So we'll talk about that in weeks to come, as well as some other encouraging developments. So thanks for joining us. For more information on these programs and to check out the archives, go to www.thegreenfront.com or listen live at the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, hoping you'll have a great green week out there. And watch what you eat. Waste matters.